Welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss strategies and improve behaviors, techniques, and attitudes using the highly successful Sandler training system. This week my guest is Tony Gostomski. Did I say your name right, Tony?
Perfect.
Gostomski. Tony is with our home office at Sandler. In fact, just introduce yourself, Tony. What's your title and what do you do for the organization?
Tony Gostomski, Vice President of Finance. I do all things related to financial statement preparation, in charge of warehouse and distribution of product, banking relationships, line of credit, anything that has to do with running this business operations A to Z.
Awesome. And the reason I wanted Tony to be on the show today is to take a little bit of a different spin. Tony, I think the best way to know the health of a business is to understand the information you can glean from the financial reporting. And so I wanted to pick your brain on what are some of the best practices that a business owner or maybe even individual should be doing to make sure they're accurately monitoring the health of their company. So where do we start?
Well, first of all, you have to sign some business, which is why I really like salespeople, because that's always good. I think really you need to make sure, listen, cash is king. Cash is absolutely king. So what you want to make sure is that you've got information coming from your financial statements, which will help you, KPIs related to what your working capital looks like. What are you taking out of the business? Are your receivables being collected timely?
Yeah.
And when you get bills, because unfortunately that's one of the things that comes with it, are you paying your bills timely? But more importantly, Jim, are you paying your payroll on time? Because that'll kill you immediately.
Right. Yeah. So there's so many things that I think we get so busy in running our business that we don't take time to really measure how well are we doing. One of the things that we use in my business is we use a 12-month rolling average to measure our sales, our receivables, all of those things, because that gives us a trend line perspective. So share with our listeners, what is a 12-month rolling average and why would that be valuable in as one of the tools on their dashboard?
One of the things I like about a 12-month rolling average is you can see where you've been, gives you an idea where you're going, because where you are at any point in time could be different. So when you drop out month 13 and you bring in a new month, of course you want to compare that to prior, or especially to budget,
right?
Because as we know, things are cyclical. You're not going to do 1/12 of all sales revenue in each month.
Right.
So it's very important to do that. And like I said, if you're really managing cash, that can give you an idea of times within that rolling 12-month period where it may be a time where you have to tap into a line of credit to make sure that you have the funds available to continue to grow the business. That will offer you great ideas as far as current assets over current liabilities. What does your working capital look like at any point in time? And it gives you kind of like the highs and lows as you work through.
Define that working capital for us.
Working capital is simply current assets minus your current liabilities. I'm sorry, I'm speaking accounting geek. it's your receivables and your cash, basically anything that is going to bring you in money, less anything that's going to take away money, your payables, your commissions, your payroll, those things are current, you have to keep up with those. So working capital is just, are you in the plus? Meaning you could take your cash as of today and pay all of your current liabilities. If you can do that, then that marginal difference is something you can choose to take out of the business, keep invested in the business, meaning maybe you want to buy another computer for a new person. It gives you an idea of what your excess is so that you can use that in the business.
Very important to understand that, because you'll notice in a company where working capital is in the red, it's a very noisy business. You've got vendors and suppliers that are asking for money, and you're having to play that game of robbing Peter to pay Paul. If you've been in business more than a month, you've probably experienced this.
Yeah, especially as you get started.
Right. So talk to us about what are some of the best practices that a company or an individual should use to make sure they are, if you're in a startup or if you're running with low cash flow, what kind of things can you do to leverage your money better?
First of all, make sure that you have somebody who stays on top of your receivables. Money in is always, I tell the folks in my department, I said, listen, concentrate on the money in before you concentrate on the money out. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to take my my payables and leave them out there for 90 or 120 days. But I'm probably, if I have 30 days on a payable, I'm gonna probably going to pay it on day 28 or 29.
Right.
Help leverage that money. Your AR person is a very, very important asset if they're doing their job. They need to be very consistent in what they do. You need to ramp things up. And if they're not getting the follow through that they expect, they need to get the owner involved to make sure.
Yeah.
I know, you know, as an owner, you don't necessarily like to talk about money, but if you find somebody is behind, certainly in your case, Jim, because you understand how business works, you may be able to help them utilize their money better so that you get paid first.
Right. Absolutely. I think a lot of people, Tony, have a hard time collecting money. And I think it's because we feel, I think people fall into that nice guy trap, a nice gal trap, where I don't want to pressure someone. They're struggling. I know they're struggling, so I'm not going to put pressure on them. And if you let that happen, now you've got, you're incurring an even higher amount of collectible, and the pressure is greater on you to try to collect it. What advice do you give to somebody who's responsible for managing those receivables to avoid wimping out?
Wow, that's a really good question for you as well, because that's what you teach people in your class. But I would say this, you do have to develop a little bit of rapport with the person whom you're speaking with. I mean, it helps.
Right.
I think you're more likely to pay somebody who seems like a nice person, but you're also going to pay the person who inquires the most often and the most consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important for your AR person to literally organize when they're going to call, what happened in the prior call, how you ramp that up quietly without seeming pushy. You can collect money without being pushy. The other thing I will say, Jim, there are going to be situations where you can't collect it immediately. You know somebody's in trouble. And, you know, we have the ability here at Sandler, if something like that happens, to work with people a little bit longer. And the reason we're able to do that is because if our working capital is good, it gives you some options that you can help people out. But the idea is you want to eventually get that money. The worst thing you can do is bad debt write-off is like the dirtiest word ever.
Right. So what's the frequency? If it's due in 30 days and you haven't received a check, when do you recommend making that first phone call? And just tell us what that phone call would sound like.
Huh. Boy, you're hitting me on a great topic here. For me, the first thing I do, because I've got a relatively easy business. I've got basically 260 people who, in order to keep their Sandler license, need to pay me.
Right.
And as such, I may look at it a little bit differently, and I may be a little bit nicer, because to me, there's a certain element of I know these people, I see them,
right,
at least once in a while. But I think honestly, the first call is, hey, Jim, it looks like you're about 45 days out. You have always paid me in 30 days. Want to just get an idea of what's going on in your world and what's happening for when we might expect to get that paid.
Nice. So it's very gentle, but it's also direct.
Sure, because I do want to know how their business is doing. And you, Jim, you're bought into all of your clients.
Right.
They need to know that you do care. And even if it's not you making the call,
right,
the important thing is the person who's making the call needs to make that call as if they're you,
yeah,
because they are your business.
Yeah. The other thing I think you need to understand is it is your money, right? They have purchased your services and they've made a contractual agreement to pay you. Now, when we get back in our next segment, we'll talk about how do we set that upfront contract to get paid promptly. But if you've done a good job there, then the expectation is that we're partners together and we're going to work together. My guest today is Tony Gostomski. Boy, Tony, can we change your name?
You know what? I've been called so many things over the years, and I've got so many nicknames. You know, Seibert calls me G-Money.
That's pretty funny.
So, I will answer to anything. Trust me.
Well, my guest is Tony Gostomski. He's the Vice President of Finance for our home office in Sandler. And I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. You can visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download our free book, Why Salespeople Fail and What You Can Do About It. This is Sandler Training, Finding Power in Reinforcement. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to learn more about my favorite heroes of society, independent business owners and leaders. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training, and we've invited Dana Manning with Learning RX to join us on Entrepreneur Radio and share with us some of her strategies that have led to success and perhaps even some hardships along the way. For me, I think the best way to learn is to hear stories from other people, learn lessons from peers, the things that they've done in their daily battle to have success. And Dana is owner of a local franchise. Welcome to the program, Dana.
Thank you for having me on.
So talk to us about Learning RX. What is it that you do?
Learning RX focuses on the 7 core cognitive skills needed for learning and thinking and performing in everyday activities. So we focus on things like attention, memory, processing speed, auditory processing, visual processing, and logic and reasoning.
So that's a lot. So what's the process? Because everything you mentioned there, I'm thinking, I need that. So who do you work with?
So we can train the brain from ages 5 to 105.
Wow.
So we get a lot of success with all of our clients. And what we first do is we do a cognitive assessment. That cognitive assessment will show us where the deficits lie with that individual. And then we establish a program that will train those specific areas and help them become successful and that so thinking and learning is easier.
So I'm in the training business also. For us, the key is ongoing reinforcement. How does your training work? Is it something that you keep doing, or is it at some point I finish and graduate?
That's an excellent question. So our goal is to do the training, to make the changes, and then you only come back to us if you want to enhance or learn a new skill. So for example, if you were to come to me and we did a cognitive assessment and I look at those deficits, I would set up a program to help you to lessen those deficits. And then after you finish that program, we have a graduation party, and then I don't anticipate seeing you again unless you said, you know what, I want to work on my comprehension capabilities or my math skills because I know that they're still really weak, or I want to learn to become a better student and learn and get some great study habits. Then we have a program for that too. And all of our training is done one-on-one with a trainer who has been trained to look for ways to increase your intensity and also to do a loading process. So we've learned that the brain can get incredible changes, but you have to do some very specific key things to be able to get the changes you want. Intensity. So all of our training is done to a metronome and to a beat. You have to give
really?
So you have to give an answer on beat. And then it's all a loading process. So the brain really isn't learning until it's challenged. So I always refer to it as a sweet spot with the brain. If it's too easy, the brain isn't learning. If it's too hard, we go into a flight or fight-flight response. And so we're not learning there either. But what we want to do at Learning RX is we're always pushing the envelope. And we don't care if you have the right answer. So we have a great rapport with our students because we are a safe place to be wrong. Because if you give the wrong answer, I'm right there to give you the right answer. And then the brain learns that what I'm saying is the correct way. And then we're going on to the next challenge.
Wow. And so in these 7 areas, is there like a curriculum for each area or a workbook?
We have our ThinkRx program. It's the very scripted program, and it works on levels of intensity and levels of difficulty. And they're all game-like activities. So we have a really fun game called Attention Arrows, where you have columns and rows of several different arrows that are 4 different colors going in all different directions. And we set that to a metronome beat, and we ask you to go across each row and go as far as you can, telling us either the color or the direction of that arrow. Then, with that particular procedure, we're also working on attention, 3 types of attention. So we have select, sustained, and divided. So at some point in that process, I'm going to try to create distractions for you. Or I might ask you some mental activities, like I want you to count by 3s or do some addition at the end of each row. You have to give me the sum of the 2 digits I gave you and stay on beat while going to the next row.
Oh my gosh, I would be your failure.
Nope, there is no such thing as failure at Learning RX. Nope.
That sounds really hard. My wife does this thing, Luminosity.
Yes.
And is it similar?
It's similar to that, except for what you're getting with us at Learning RX is you're getting the one-on-one, you're getting immediate feedback, you're getting somebody there who is your personal coach, who is being your biggest cheerleader and encouraging you on. It's a safe place. And we're also increasing the level of difficulty very quickly, and we're also increasing the level of intensity.
You know, I think the human brain is the most important organ.
Yes, it is.
And it is the least, I don't know the word, we don't pay attention to it.
No, we don't.
Right?
We take advantage of it.
Yeah, right? It's like going to a therapist or a counselor, hugely beneficial because you're having somebody speak into your life. In your case, helping identify cognitive issues and then make up for those, are they all trainable?
Absolutely.
So like, for example, I'll give you one of mine.
Yes.
I have a hard time remembering names.
Yes.
I have my entire life. I just cannot remember names. So how would you go about helping me?
So we have several built-in procedures that work on memory. One of them is called memory digits, where you have a card that you are allowed to look at for a brief period of time, maybe 3 to 4 seconds, and then you have to remember where those digits were placed on that card. We also have memory hold, where we're giving you 2 digits, having you give us the sum of those 2 digits. As I add another digit to it, you have to remember what the last digit I gave you after I give you the new digit, and you have to give a new sum. All of these procedures are built in there so that you are increasing not only your long-term memory, but your working memory. And working memory is about a maximum of 30 seconds. So if you drop anything within that 30 seconds in your working memory, you're not able to proceed or give output for what is being required of you.
Wow. That's awesome. It reminds me of that series, Brain Training. Have you seen that program?
Mm-hmm.
Is it similar to that?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of exercises there that, because they have you as an audience play along and see. I always struggle with that.
Well, and so here's the great thing, and this is what people don't understand about cognitive training, is everybody thinks we're born with a certain IQ and we're stuck with that IQ, and that is not true, because research has shown that our brains are plastic, and the really cool word is called neuroplasticity.
Ah.
Neuroplasticity, all it means is that we can get change in our brains so that memory, you have better recall of memory and people's names. The other thing is a myth that needs to be debunked is that people who are born with dyslexia or have reading struggles cannot learn to read very effectively, and that is not true. And that has to deal with the part of the brain called auditory processing. And auditory processing means that you can hear correctly, but the brain is not processing what was heard correctly. And so what we work with on our students is we learn to help them identify the correct sounds for individual letters so that they can blend, segment, and analyze, and therefore reading becomes so much easier. For example, I had a student come who was 16 years old, taking summer school, not going to pass, not sure that he was going to graduate. After the completion of our program, there's no measurement that we have currently for self-confidence, but his self-confidence was beaming off of him.
Wow.
He walked more erect, he was smiling, and now after taking the program, he's taking AP classes and has been accepted by a college, and he's getting all A's and B's.
So went from, I may not graduate, to A's and B's.
He couldn't read.
Wow. And so you were able to discover that and then give him the tools to help him.
Yep.
So what's the time commitment in training? How long does a program take?
So the way to get changes is by a number of hours. And so to get real change cognitively, you're looking at a minimum of 60 hours.
So is that done in a couple of weeks, or is it spread out over?
Yeah, it is. And we have a lot of different training options. Most people choose to do 3 days a week for an hour and a half, and it's very intense.
That's a big commitment.
It is a very, the alternative is no change.
Right. Well, it sounds like a very needed resource. So describe to us, who are your target clients, just so if somebody in the audience might fall into that category, to prompt them to give you a call.
Exactly. If you have a student who is struggling in school and the school is saying, we're not sure what to do, we'll do accommodations or modifications to help that child be successful in school. That is not necessary. We are the perfect resource for helping that child become successful at school. I am a retired teacher, and I believe every student has the capability to learn, and learning can become a lot easier. So we also have had some adults who have come and sought our services who want to become more efficient at work, not having to work so hard. Like you had mentioned, memory was a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
As we get older, our minds kind of atrophy, and we don't have the ability to have recall memory with our memory as much as we used to. And so we can help strengthen that skill so that you're not having to work as hard at work. So you can remember numbers, so you can remember people's names, so you can remember the contact information, and you don't have to rely on always jotting down notes.
Wow, that is phenomenal. To even think that you could, I mean, it makes sense that you can coach and train your brain, but to have somebody who's able to identify, here are the key areas that we think you're struggling, and here's the strategies to overcome it, that's phenomenal.
It is.
So tell us, Dana, a little bit about how long have you been doing this, and what inspired you to start this business or buy this franchise?
So, like I mentioned, I'm a retired teacher, and one of the biggest problems I had in my classroom was those kids who struggled. And they only consist of about 5% of your classroom, but you don't know what to do with them. And so, you know, you try to reach that child using several different learning modalities, and it did not matter what I did. Those same students struggled, not only in my classroom, but going forward also. And I came across LearningRx when it hit my own household and my own son started struggling. And we put him through the program, and he, after completion of the program, he was able to get it back into an honors math class. He doubled up on the math requirements, and he didn't have to study as hard. Mm. He started getting straight A's. Mm. He decreased the amount of studying. There was no World War III to get him to study anymore in our house. And by the time he was a junior in high school, he had already gone through linear algebra at BSU.
Wow.
So he is 19 years old, and he's going to be graduating from BSU this May.
Wow.
And already has initial job offers. And he will be the first to tell you that if it hadn't been for LearningRx, he would not be as successful as he is now. And he still, to this day, it amazes me how many college credits he's taken. At one point, he was taking 21 college credits and still did not have to study very hard.
Wow. That's phenomenal. It really
is. It's very exciting.
Must be exciting to be in that business because you really see significant change in the people you help.
You see it in their facial expressions and how they carry themselves.
So it's different. Sounds like it's different from tutoring. Explain the difference there.
So tutoring is taking the same content that was being taught in the classroom, but doing it through repetition. You're not going to get any change by doing the same thing through repetition if you still can't remember things, if you still have a deficit with working memory or short-term memory, or reading is still a struggle, and you can't identify individual sounds. So an auditory process, a deficit might look like person always going, huh, what did you say? Or adding letters to a word that isn't really there, flipping the letters, or mixing up B, P, D, Qs.
Mm.
Or it can be also in the spoken word, such as I might be showing you a couch and a chair and asking you to compare those. And you say, you said compare the cow and the hare. And so you're hearing correctly, but your brain isn't processing what it heard correctly.
Is there a name for that?
Well, you could call it a reading struggle. You could say that they have dyslexia.
Yeah.
There's several different labels you can attach to that, but we don't care about labels because we know we can get effective change.
So in your mind, is there a place for tutoring?
Absolutely. So tutoring is very beneficial for those students who have missed content because they have a weak cognitive skill. So after their cognitive skills have been strengthened, then what needs to happen is they've got gaps in their education that they have to be filled in order to be successful and to graduate.
Wow, so much. So my mind is thinking most of your clients must be adult, but it sounds like it's mostly kids.
You know, it is mostly kids. We have adults, like I said, who do come and seek our services, and they have benefited greatly from it. And I think that adults are finding now that they still need to invest in themselves. They've spent all of their time, you know, working on getting their degrees, getting their career, getting their education, and now what they're finding is maybe they're being passed up for that next promotion. Maybe they're not being looked at seriously as much as they should be because they aren't being able to complete a task on time. They aren't being able to complete a task with the details needed for that next promotion. We can help with those areas because we work on efficiency of the mind and then also all those skills.
I can think of quite a few business owners that I know who have members of their team that are underperforming. They don't know how to help them. And if they had a tool like this, because when you have somebody who just isn't making it and you don't want to get rid of them, what do you do? How do you fill the gap? So this sounds like a great way to help as a third person identify what is the issue and then how do we fix it?
Absolutely.
And do you bring, in a case like that, would you bring the CEO in on it or is there?
Yes. I think that, you know, when you're talking about a small business or a larger corporation who's interested in helping their employees be more successful because, you know, turnover of employees is very costly. costly. And so I would have the CEO get involved and be a part of the process and see where it is that their deficits lie, and then the end results and how more successful they are going forward.
Dana Manning is my guest. She's the owner of Learning RX. Dana, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Absolutely. We are located at 1910 North Lakes Place, Meridian, and a great phone number to reach us at is 208-258-2077. 208-258-2077.
And I'm guessing your website is learningrx.com?
Learningrx.com.
Awesome. Great. Great. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you,
really
Jim.
Appreciate it. On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the stories of leaders and individuals who drive change to see how they've achieved success. If you like our content, visit our website at crossroads.sandler.com and see if we can help you. So far, I've been speaking with Sandler trainer Tony Gostomski, and we've been talking about the importance of managing money correctly and really understanding what are some of the key dashboard indicators that are going to tell me I'm heading in the right direction, a warning sign that says I really need to be prepared for something that is coming up that might be unforeseen if I wasn't acutely looking at it. What we talked about at first, Tony, is accounts receivable. Cash is king, so you got to keep that money coming in and help people manage through difficult times. If you treat them like your partner, with frequency asking them, they're more likely to pay you than somebody who is demanding payment. However, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So I think, Tony, it starts with the upfront contract you have with the business when you engage in business together. So what does that sound like when it comes to prompt payment?
I think part of collecting is knowing to whom you're speaking. Always good. I talk a lot to Sandler owners and realistically, it's like, hey, Jim, listen, you know, you've got these fees to pay me. We're in business together, but I've got to make sure that you are in it with me as well. And when I say in it with me, we've got a contract, and that contract says you pay me X dollars each month. My business is run predicated on the fact that you will take care of that on the day that you're supposed to. Can I count on you, Jim, to make sure that that's going to happen?
Love it. Love it. And having that mutual agreement up front and talking about what happens if it doesn't work out. One of the things I do with my clients is my contract clearly states when payment is due and how much it is, and it's a monthly fee, and the typical engagement is probably 3 to 5 years. So there's this ongoing receivable that we have, and what I tell a client when they're signing a contract is, look, I know that businesses cycle, and there may come a time when cash is tight for you. If that happens, I want to help, because I think my job, what I do in Sandler, is I help you make money. So if you ever see that you're going to have difficulty in making a payment, just give me a call so we can talk through it. If you have that kind of mutual agreement up front, I don't know that that always works, but at least it sets the tone that there is equal business stature. Your thoughts?
No, absolutely true. Yes, that I didn't bring this up before, but you know, when guys are behind, I will ask them, say, hey, listen, send me what you can, but before you send it, call me. Let's make sure that we talk every month until your business cycle allows you to make this payment perfectly.
Nice.
And I do, you know, believe it or not, not everybody is as successful as Jim in this business. So, you know, I make a phone call or two a month.
Right.
There are always in business, you will always find that there are 5 to 10% of people who will struggle.
Yeah. And part of your job, if they are a retained client, you want to help them through those struggles. Now, there is a strategy that's used by many businesses where the concept is, I'm going to borrow money from my vendors and suppliers, and I borrow that by not making the payment, right? We work a lot with insurance restoration companies, and it's not uncommon for an insurance company to not pay the contractor until 60 or even 90 days after the project's done. If you have a situation like that, what does the phone call sound like reversed? How do I get my money faster?
Whew. I think, and first of all, the upfront contract is key, but I think you also, because you understand their business, you can talk specifically to the industry when you speak with them and say, hey Jim, listen, I know that in your business, there are going to be times when payments to you are further out than what your receivables are. But what I need to know from you is, where are you as far as the ability? Let's say that there is a point in time. Do you have the working capital to still make that payment on time, because I'd prefer to stick to our contract rather than letting things get behind. Because as soon as things start getting behind, here's one thing I know, Jim, you're not just probably behind with me, you're probably behind with others.
Good point.
I want to make sure, since I am trying to help you in your business, that I really need to be at the top or close to the top of that list.
So I love the approach using a third-party story, because you can tell someone what you want them to do by using a third-party story, and it imprints in their mind a mental image or a model of how you're asking them to perform.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears and talk about I'm going to give you my perspective on accountants. So don't take this personally, Tony. But I think, generally speaking, the accountants are responsible to make sure, if they're preparing your taxes, they're responsible to make sure that your taxes are done accurately, and they have to answer really to the IRS for that. Fair?
That's correct.
And because of that, I think oftentimes accountants have a different perspective on businesses than somebody who might be looking at it as you would from a business perspective. So the advice that Dave Mattson, our CEO, might get from his tax accountant would be vastly different what Tony's telling him, because Tony's looking at it from, how do we leverage money to make more money and not spend taxes? Give us your thoughts.
Well, I think as a corporate accountant, your job is, it needs to be accurate. The collection of data and the culmination of a financial statement are of utmost importance. I truly believe that the best accountants are ones who have maybe done some public time or some tax time,
yeah,
and they come into the business with a nice set of skills. They've seen lots of different businesses. I think it prepares them better to answer questions specific to that business. And the beautiful thing, Jim, is once they make that transition, they can really study and focus their efforts on a particular business and how that should work
and what's
important to ownership.
If you're responsible for collecting data and collecting it accurately, that's only one piece of the puzzle. What I find often happens is businesses do a pretty good job of managing to collect the data. Where they fall down is in reporting what they've collected to the person who needs to know it. And I think part of the reason that happens is if it's not a pretty picture, we tend to shoot the messenger. Fair?
I would call that accurate. But really, as a business owner, you also have to be prepared that your internal accountant is the guy that's got to be watching the nickels and dimes so you can cover the strategy to move forward and grow the business.
I love that. So what are the top 3 to 5 reports that you think it's vital to look at least monthly to make sure, or to present to, if you're somebody who's a full-charge bookkeeper accountant listening, what are the most important reports to give to that business owner to make sure they know where they're at?
Okay, beautiful. The first thing that I do weekly with Dave, and I think it's so important, is we do a 4-week rolling cash flow report. It helps us understand what monies we have coming in, what monies we have going out, and when you couple that with your current balance, it lets you know where the money will swing to lower amounts where we may need some help.
And so you're doing that on a weekly basis. That's high frequency. What's the reason behind that?
Well, the high frequency is really because it does help us keep in touch with the people who owe us money when mm-hmm. we're looking at the cash coming in. It also gives us an idea of, tells us what our payroll is, right? We know at minimum we've got to cover payroll and basic expenses. Once again, we're looking week to week. It's like, okay, there's, for just throwing out numbers, there's 500 coming in and 300 going out, and our balance is a million. Okay, that's a good week.
Yeah.
But there will be other weeks when it turns the other way. And the sooner we know about that, the easier it is to bridge that gap.
Nice.
If there's some sort of a short-term thing you need, or if you need to hit the phones a little bit harder to collect a few dollars.
Good. So what other reports are you looking at on a weekly basis?
On a, maybe not weekly, but I do a monthly financial statement for Dave, which, not including the actual financial reports that are spit out by our accounting system, it's probably probably about 30 additional pages. And those pages include everything from, you know, of course, you got your income statement and balance sheet. You've got page and a half of ratio analysis to see where we are year to date. You've got several pages. You've got an AR page to see who owes us money, with the stress being on this, Jim, on who's past due.
Right.
That's really the piece that we want to look at. You know, we do some things on specific accounts, travel and entertainment. How much are we spending to go visit people? You know, as you know, we do this thing called a Sandler Summit every year.
Right, there's a big dollar.
It's a very large dollar amount. And the good news is we get dollars from franchisees buying seats as we go through the year.
Right.
That's all great, as long as you're making sure you have that money on the side when the big hotel bill comes.
You kept the money. You didn't spend it.
and I'll tell you, that's so important, because you're going to have prepaids. That would be a prepaid expense. If I get too accounting geeky, stop me.
All right.
It's just money in advance to pay for what we have to spend later for hotel bills, audio visual equipment, bringing all the Sandler people down. And we want to make sure that we manage that. In fact, we've got Erica Stubbs here in our office, who is like 100%. She does a million things for Steve, but call it 90% of her time is spent just budgeting and looking at the expenditures for just our conferences and our summit. So that's important.
My guest today is Tony Gostomski. He's the Senior Vice President of Finance for Sandler Home Office. I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and want to subscribe to our content, visit us at crossroads.sandler.com/podcast, or reach out to me at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Insanity is doing the same thing the same way, expecting different results. Change is difficult and messy. As a result, most people push themselves to work harder because they don't realize there's an alternative. Sheer willpower and determination can only go so far in making a significant impact. Charisma or optimism alone is not enough to capture your ideal client at a price point that allows you to grow your business. Loyalty to employees and clients sustains a devoted following, but will not attract the talent or clients needed to help more people benefit from your services. Accurate systems and processes are vital. However, this alone is not going to achieve your desired results. Most business owners don't have the courage necessary to challenge their comfort zone. If you are the exception and are ready to roll up your sleeves, get messy, and change, call me at Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Or connect on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Tony, so far we've been talking about some of the important things we should look at when it comes to managing money, reporting that we need to be doing, how do we set it up so that we've got good cash flow and we're managing our cash flow. Let's talk in practical terms. What kind of meeting should an accountant or a bookkeeper have with a business owner to make sure that they're aware of the things that need attention? You mentioned you do some weekly and then monthly meetings. Talk to us a little more about that.
I meet for about an hour each week. Now, I see David every day. If something comes up, certainly I stop him if it's important. But that weekly meeting is one of those things where it's not just review of our cash flow statement or any one particular thing. You know, being a small company, the accounting geek has to do a lot of other things as well,
right,
whether it's human resource type stuff or whatever. So the important thing for me to do is to make sure that I have all of the data information that Dave needs, that I take the time to explain what it means and how it comes together. And then I need to be able to offer up, or I'm not worth my weight in anything if I don't offer up what I think are good solutions moving forward. Because if I can't help him do that, sure, anybody can put a financial statement together and say, here it is.
Right.
But you really need to make sure that you are there to offer solutions or suggestions. The beauty of being in Dave's position as CEO and owning the company is that whatever I tell him, he can choose to do it, ask more questions about it, or say, well, I really have my way of doing it. And the great thing about Dave is he'll let me know. He'll let me know the path he wants to proceed on.
We work with a lot of small businesses, and I define a small business as anywhere between maybe $15 million down to $1 million a year. In those businesses, it's not uncommon for the business owner to really not have an accurate grasp on financials. And one of the things Joan does for our clients is she'll go in and do a financial audit, take a look at their chart of accounts, look at some of their cash flow reporting, look at what reports do they look at, and then help them, because we can help them increase sales, but if you're not increasing your competency to manage the money that comes in, it's easy to spend your way out of business. So give us your thoughts on that.
Wow. Yeah, you see it a lot. And it's not about managing revenue. It's about managing all the other elements that get you to a margin that is sufficient to not only stay in business, but also to pay that owner.
Right.
So I really believe that looking at things like your product mix and what your cost of sales look like, that gross margin is a beautiful thing. But just remember, you've got payroll and office expenses and travel expenses, insurance. There are a whole lot of things that you need to look at, and you need to make sure that if anything gets a little awry, that you address it quickly. And I think if you're not informing your CEO about that on a regular basis, you are falling short of what you need to do.
And I think when it comes to managing your chart of accounts, having a clear understanding of what your direct costs are is so important. I think people artificially beef up their operating expense because they're not really seeing the direct cost associated. Like, for example, I believe any sales commission is a direct cost. And so that needs to be factored in above the line so that I don't load up my operating expense and look like I'm chewing up 30% of the revenue just to keep the doors open. So help us talk through what are some of those direct costs and why is it important to look at direct or variable costs compared to operating expense?
Well, you know, first and foremost, your direct costs are associated with every piece of something you sell.
Right.
When you get over to personnel and some of the other things, you can keep personnel at a certain level, maybe from 8 to 10 million, and then you need to add another component. So
right.
The direct costs are by far the most critical. I agree with you, especially on the commission piece. Yeah, that truly is a direct cost. Although it comes in payroll, listen, if somebody's working on a base salary, yeah, that's overhead, but your direct cost is going to be that whatever percent commission that you're paying that person.
And I think that direct cost is really, that's the factor that you mark up in order to get to the gross margin target. Like, for example, I think too often you might have somebody who's in a remodeling company. I have a remodeling company. I might have the role of the business owner, but there are times when I'm out in the field billable hours to the client. That is a direct cost, right? And if I don't cost account those separately, I don't really have a clear picture. So what makes a company profitable is making sure we're hitting the margin targets. And frankly, I think, Tony, a lot of people don't understand the difference between a markup and a margin. Do you want to explain that?
Well, gosh, a markup, let's see. You know, and anybody can take what they see as their cost of something and mark it up, whether it's dollars or percents, and come to a number as far as what we're charging for something.
Right.
If you want to know what your margins are, you have to find a price that you need to sell in order to achieve that.
Right. And I think that's where most people get screwed up, because I sell the price I'm comfortable selling or the price I think the buyer will buy, as opposed to the number I need to be successful.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing to do, Jim, because you know we don't like to do things that are difficult for us.
Right, right. And I think in a company that's, say, $5 million or less, typically the target I have for my clients is, I want you to have a 10% net profit, I want you to have 30% to cover your operating expense, and then you're going to have 60% to cover your direct costs. So that would mean we're working at a 40% gross profit margin. Well, to get a 40% gross profit margin, the markup is 67%. So if you think I'm going to get a 40% gross margin by marking things up 40%, at 40% markup, you're maybe at what, 22, 25 margin.
Yep.
And so understanding that and really knowing how to price your product, I think, is as crucial as knowing how to sell your product. Your thoughts.
Perfect. I think pricing is, you know, even in a Sandler business, pricing may be different everywhere.
Right.
Okay. You may have different overhead costs. Maybe your labor can be cheaper and your rent can be cheaper there. So you may be able to charge less for a mastery subscription.
Right.
So really, everybody needs to look at where they are and start with what your operating expenses are going to be. Make some calculations on what things cost you and develop your price based on that so that, you know, not only are you breaking even, good gosh, we're not doing anything if we're breaking even.
Yeah.
What are we building? So if you get things done and you get things at the right price, the other thing is, Jim, I think your mind plays tricks on you. If you come up with a price that the proper thing for you is X dollars for a mastery, 1 year subscription, it's really hard once you've convinced yourself of that to now go back out and change it and say, well, gosh, it really is X plus Y.
Yeah.
Is what I have to charge. That's something that's going to play in your head because it's more difficult because you at one point assigned a value, now it's changed.
And you need to raise your prices accordingly or otherwise you're paying the difference. My rule of thumb for a business is I have 10, 10, and 10. I think 10% of the revenue of the company should be owner's compensation for their involvement in the firm. 10% we should be making in net profit and we should have 10% liquidity. If you hit those numbers, basically, you've got a healthy business, whether it's $1.5 million business or a $10 million business.
Yeah, that 10% number to the owners for compensation makes a big difference whether you're at $1.5 million or $10 million.
Yeah,
but
right.
But
if you think about it, large corporations where the CEOs are knocking down $60 million a year, I mean, that's a big number, right? But when you look at it in their percentage of revenue, it's a minuscule percent.
Correct.
My guest today is Tony Gostomski. Tony is the Senior Vice President of Finance for Sandler National, and I am Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you'd like to receive my weekly tips on how to jumpstart your professional development, sign up at crossroads.sandler.com. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Sandler sales to me is like muscle memory for the brain. If you become an excellent free throw shooter, you don't stop practicing free throws. If you become a great golfer, you don't stop practicing your swing. It's the same thing with sales. And I come every week for about 5 years, and I leave almost every week with, dang it, I missed a step on this last sale, or that's a piece I need to improve of. So it becomes automatic, like those free throws and those golf swings.
Look at it as an investment in your team. Get past the time that you've got to put into it if you're going to reap the benefits. And you may not see it at first. Hang with it and it will come. And you'll start seeing those skills come out in your employees and they'll feel better about themselves. They'll feel better professionally. They'll feel like they're learning and growing. Just the education that it brought to the forefront of my management team helped their personal feelings about their work here.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
Welcome back to Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Sandler trainer Tony Gostomski. Full disclosure, Tony's not really a Sandler trainer, but he's been in the Sandler business for 19 years, and he works on the inside. He's our corporate vice president of finance. Tony, in this segment, what I want to talk about is, do you eat your own dog food? Right?
Oh, no.
So as a CFO, so here's my belief about Sandler. I think we change cultures of businesses when the business involves everybody in the training. I don't think the training is just for salespeople. I think it's for customer service. I think it's for finance. Every level of an organization will benefit by understanding the communication techniques and strategies that we train in Sandler. So take it away, Tony. Tell us about your journey in becoming the Sandler guru that you are.
Wow. Sandler guru. That hurts. I got to tell you, the Sandler business 19 years ago was completely different than what
it is
now.
Oh my gosh, right.
And I did not get a whole lot of flavor to what Sandler was really until David bought the business. David and I have known each other since day one that I came in here. And, you know, if I'm being brutally honest, I haven't sat in but a couple of President's Club / Mastery courses.
Hmm.
I do love our conferences because they help me get a flavor of Sandler more so. And I also like that I have enough experience in Sandler to at least sometimes understand when people are working me with the system.
Yeah, right.
My favorite thing to do when somebody calls me and says, am I catching you at a bad time? And it's, of course, it's going to be a franchisee. The first thing I say is, listen, please don't do did that pattern interrupt stuff on me? You're my customer. I always have time for you.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, I just got an email back. Somebody's reversing me. Every time I send out an email, especially if I send it to more than one person, if I send it to 10 people, I'll get 8 reverses, 1 answer, and 1 need more information, right? So
so you have the system inflicted on you on a regular basis.
Yes, and because of that, I've become significantly better at dealing with it. So do I know everything up front? No, but I know things to listen for now, and not just with Sandler-specific methodology, but also people's DISC profile. Right. You know, I do get better every day, but it would be nice if I was assigned a coach
right.
who could really help me.
Right. No, I think that's true. At home office, do the employees attend a customer care program? Is that part of your onboarding that they learn the Sandler stuff?
The answer is eventually we all get that, yes. Listen, I don't know who onboards other departments, but my guess is that we're all using Sandler Online in one way, shape, or fashion. We all have access to all of that material, the audios, the videos, which I think in the small snippets that they're given are just great learning tools to get an idea
right.
of that, especially role plays, because when you hear it like that, it tends to stick with you a lot better.
Yeah, practicing is so important. And if you're practicing in front of your clients, we call that malpractice, right? So you got to create a safe environment for all of your employees to learn the fundamentals of how do I handle an unhappy client? We train in Sandler processes that help you de-escalate an emotional situation. But if you have those tools, you don't feel out of sorts when that happens because you have a level of confidence in it. And if you've gone through some role playing, it's muscle memory, right? We just finished the Olympics. The reason people are winning gold, silver, and bronze is that they've practiced over and over and over again. If they came out the first time they're doing it, they wouldn't even make the team. So your thoughts on the importance of training within an organization just at all levels?
It's very important. I am a very good golfer, but if you look at me, you'd say, how in the world can that guy play? Well, it's very, very simple. I practice harder than anybody at everything that I do. And that makes me at least good enough to play against anybody, right? But yeah, if you don't practice, things disappear when you don't practice.
Right.
It's, you know, the muscles can be built or the muscles can atrophy. If you're practicing, those muscles are building, and the Sandler muscles that help you have the attitude, behavior, and techniques to get things done are going to get better. Yeah, I think I'm just a huge role play believer.
Good.
Mattson a lot of times will, you know, hey, let's play this out.
Right. That's awesome. Let's shift gears, Tony. And the thing about Sandler is the number one thing we help our clients work on is their brain. It's really getting your thoughts straight so that your actions produce the results that you want. So I'm curious, what are some of the things you're working on in your own personal development to manage your thinking? We often hear things in Sandler like journaling, affirmations, podcasts is a great way.
Okay, so for me, yeah, I've got some affirmations every day that I have to tell myself. I do listen to. Now, I don't do the podcast so much as I've got some of the older MP3s.
Oh, yeah.
For Sandler, things like pain I find interesting, and I find it very interesting to listen to several different franchisees doing things on pain because they all have a slightly different
right.
way of getting there. Gosh.
Have you listened to the new CD that we put out on transactional analysis?
You know what? I was just about to go there because, yes, I have listened to that. That's helpful for me.
Oh, my God.
Because I've got two daughters who are now 26 and 23. I don't know how they didn't kill me back 15 years ago when I went critical parent on an almost regular basis.
Right. I was the same way.
Dave Mattson and Bruce Seidman suggested, hey, listen, man, this transactional analysis is some great stuff. And I think it was Bruce who actually produced a CD for me where he pulled a bunch of different things from Sandler to create that for me. And it helped. In fact, I had a sign And I don't know whether you can even see me or read this.
Right.
But
critical parent drive.
Yeah, it's a road sign, and it was above my door until I just moved my office.
Oh, awesome.
But it's very important, and I have become, because of that specific area, I have become a much better listener than I used to be.
Yeah, no, that transactional analysis, I think, is one of the secret sauce that we train in Sandler. And that CD, if you're interested as a listener, you would like to get a copy of it. It's $100. We're really proud of our stuff, but it has hours and hours and hours of content that will help you understand the psychology behind how people think. And to Tony's point, it's a great tool for helping you to become a better parent, a better spouse, just a better member of the community. So we're almost out of time, Tony. Any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Listen, if you are an owner of a business, make sure that the person who you've entrusted as your accountant, and I'll call them an accountant, I'll call them a business advisor.
Oh, good.
Because if they're not a business advisor, you need to look at it. You need to make sure you're getting all of the information that's available. And trust me, a financial statement is just a tremendous amount of information that your accountant needs to be able to dissect, understand, and convey to you exactly what it means. You know, budgeting. The other thing I'll say is we didn't cover much on budgeting, but I think it's very important to understand not just where you've been, but where you plan to be.
Great point.
I think make sure you've got the right people on the bus.
Awesome. Tony Gostomski has been my guest today. Tony, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to challenge people to resist the status quo. Are you frustrated because you're living with just good enough? Do you feel forced to accept chaos and volatility in daily business and customer relationships? Or are you anxious by your career of trial and error and learning the hard way? If you're ready to stand up to the insanity of programmed living, call me at 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you will manage it.